Any questions you may have about meditation practice, mindfulness practice, and the many kind of things that may come up in terms of one's daily life, and how to bring greater clarity, groundedness, harmony, well-being into one's life. We do meditation, we practice mindfulness, we practice insight, we practice concentration, we practice all kinds of things. Compassion, loving kindness, you know, on and on and on. All those good things we practice. But we practice them not irrespective of interrelationship. So we don't just practice them as qualities or characteristics that we are cultivating for ourselves or within ourselves. These are all qualities and characteristics that are developed in relationship, right, to others. And whether these others are society, friends, families, colleagues, loved ones, hated ones, you know, whatever they are, it is always in the context of life and relationship that all these qualities are developed. Even the idea of mindfulness or awareness, if there is mindfulness, there always has to be mindfulness of something. So there always is a relationship, whether it's a relationship of the eyes to what it sees and relationship of the ears to the sounds it hears, or the relationship of the body to what it senses, or the relationship of mind and its relationship to thoughts or feelings or perceptions. There's always relationship. And so we are practicing that in all our relationships, our relationship with our own internal phenomena, our relationship with so-called worldly phenomena, which means everything, that our relationship be one of harmony, well-being, compassion. And the way we do that is by utilizing the capacity to be present, to be mindful, so we can clearly see what is occurring, and then to look deeply into it. Now, again, so this is not always that simple, as many of us who've practiced have found out. Much easier to read about it, much easier to talk about it, much easier to think about it than to actually live it. But living it is the test. So that's by way of introduction to say, if you have any questions about the application of the teachings and the practices to your life, things that aren't clear or aren't going well, please feel free to ask a question. Don't be shy. This means everybody's shy, or this means nobody has any questions, everything's very clear. Life is proceeding with great harmony and self-awareness. Yes.
I'm relatively new to meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious how you're supposed to meditate on just your breath and clear your mind, but then in my readings I'll seem to meditate on a certain idea. And I'm having trouble with that parallel. How do I clear my mind while trying to focus on something?
Yeah. So again, the question is, what's this meditation about? I'm supposed to meditate on my breath, but then I've been reading, I'm supposed to be meditating on some idea, but I'm supposed to be clearing my mind of ideas. So how do you? So this is the problem with practicing these days, because we don't. In the old days, it was very simple, right? There wasn't a lot to read. There was no internet. There wasn't, there wasn't this plethora of information. Much of it contradictory. You know, you wanted to learn meditation. You went to a meditation teacher, and he gave you your instructions, and you followed them. Unfortunately, today, you know, I would imagine just in here in Tampa and St. Pete, if you wanted to attend every group that teaches meditation, within a couple of weeks, you could get yourself totally confused. Right? Because you could go to many different groups and they'll all be saying different things and giving you different things to meditate on. And and then if you read and if you go on the internet, yeah. So it's like that. The bottom line is meditation is overused. It doesn't really mean, it's like love, you know, I mean. So I think, you know, all we can do is really talk about the specifics of a certain tradition or school. So let me talk about Buddhist meditation, which is where kind of what we do here. And even within Buddhist meditation, the meditation schools are fairly elaborate. And there are schools that we could say do analytical meditations, where you're kind of using the mind in a thinking, analytical way to look deeply into some subject, such as impermanence, such as ego or self, such as loving kindness, compassion. So there are all kinds of meditations that one can work on in an analytical sense, trying to change the way one views things or think about things. There are many kinds of meditation where you meditate on a thing. You meditate on some kind of visualization that you create in your mind. You meditate on a mantra or some kind of a sound. You open your eyes and you meditate on an object to focus your mind. So again, there are many, many types of meditations that serve different functions. I would say that the cultivation of mindfulness is kind of central to all, because mindfulness is really the ground of any meditative system, whether it's analytical or non-analytical, form or formless, because one has to learn how to be present, right? present to whatever it is one is wanting to meditate on. So the cultivation of learning how to be mindful, learning how to be present, learning how to be aware of what is going on in front of one, I think is essential. Right? Then the second stage, I think, in all meditative systems is to concentrate. So mindfulness allows us to know that I want to meditate on something, and I can be aware of that something. But then if I want to get some competency in it, I have to concentrate. I have to be able to keep the mind somewhat focused on that which I'm meditating on so I can get some results. So we could say that mindfulness and concentration are kind of present in most schools of meditation, Buddhist and non-Buddhist. Now, awareness of the breath is actually, even though the Buddha taught many, many different types of meditation, the first ones he taught were awarenesses of the body and the breath. And I think for obvious reasons. With meditating on the body breath, you're not putting anything into your mind. So you're not putting some sort of thought, some sort of subject matter. You're not putting a visualization, you're not putting a mantra, you're not putting a sound, right? You're not adding anything. You don't have to manufacture anything. You are just becoming aware of something that is very natural to you, right? Your breath. In other words, we are always breathing. From the moment we wake up to the moment we fall asleep, there is always an in-breath followed by an out-breath followed by an in-breath. So it is something that is kind of very organic and natural to all human beings, the breath and the body breathing. So making that a kind of natural object of meditation allows us to have an anchor that is always available to us, right? And it's, again, in this type of meditation, we are not trying to elaborate, we're trying to simplify. And so becoming aware of our breath, this is as simple as you get. Okay? The other wonderful thing, I think, about learning to develop a relationship of mindfulness to your body and your breath, again, is it is always with you. And it is something that you can be aware of no matter where you are. So more complicated meditations on certain thoughts or certain concepts or certain kind of visualizations or mantras are things that are really not things that you carry on when you're at work or doing other things. Well, you can maintain awareness of the breath while you're at work, or while you're on the computer, while you're doing whatever you're doing, while you're working, while you're brushing your teeth. So it is not only a great subject of formal meditation, but it is also something that you can take with you and use it to kind of ground you, right, throughout the day. And it allows you to have a kind of a platform for developing mindfulness in all aspects of your life. You know, breathing in, I'm aware that, let's say, breathing in, I'm aware that I'm looking at you. You see, so the breath is the grounding, and it can be the stepping stone to stepping out into the world of seeing, breathing in, I'm aware that I'm hearing. And then you can use the breath, breathing in, I'm aware of my thoughts. I'm aware of breathing in, breathing out, I'm aware of a certain feeling inside me. So the breath can then be a stepping stone. And actually, in the Anapanasati Sutra, which is the Buddha's first teachings on full awareness of the breath, he basically establishes first breath meditation, breath awareness, and then uses it to explore the body, sensations, feeling, the mind, thoughts, the objects of the senses, all coming from an awareness of the breath. So did that answer your question? Yeah.
So I guess I can get a little more advanced to concentrate on my breath and follow up on it.
Well, you don't. You don't want to follow a thought. Okay, this is. Yeah, so let me. That's really part two of your question. So let me get to that. In a certain way, thoughts are really the problem. It is our thinking that gets us into trouble all the time. Because it is through our thinking that we interpret situations, we project onto situations, right? We elaborate stories and dramas. I mean, right? Endlessly, the mind is creating these kinds of things. Some of them are benign, some of them are harmless, but a lot of them cause us suffering. It causes us emotionality, causes us to act out in certain ways. So thinking is really the problem. Okay? Now, having said that, it's not like thinking is bad. Right? It's only a problem when we grasp onto it and act from it. Right? So what we're also doing in our meditation, while we are focusing on our breath, we are learning to let go of, not follow, not get involved in thought. Is that clear? It's nothing to be stopped. If you try to stop your thoughts, you will have more thoughts. Right? It's a loser. You know, and many people think the problem is, you know, meditation's about stopping thought. Meditation's not about. I mean, there are some meditations, trance-like meditations, where you are, but that's not it. You know, in mindfulness, what you're attempting to do is, if I can hold thought in mindfulness and not grasp, not embroider, not follow, not ruminate, not obsess, but just, you know, thoughts come and go. Good thoughts come and go, bad thoughts come and go, happy thoughts come and go. And if you can just see them as thoughts, which means, but to be doing that, you have to have a certain degree of mindfulness. Because most of the time, our relationship to thoughts are what? Very unconscious. We're just swept along with them. You know, it's the drama of the hour, right? And we're, you know, we have this drama going, and then we finally work through that one, and then we develop another. You know, we walk down the street, we have drama, right? We judge this one, we evaluate this. If that's nothing happening, we'll remember things that we can get some emotionality cooking about, right? We want to learn to see that is what's going on, and just to let it go. In the same way, and you heard me say, to learn to listen to sounds, again, without making a story. I don't have to go, oh, that's a pretty sound, I really like that, it reminds me of another time, when, you know what I'm saying? Or, gee, I really hate that sound, it's really disturbing my meditation, I mean, wish that person would stop doing that, they're so rude, don't they have any sensitivity, right? Rather than just what? Just a sound. No need for a story, no need for attachment, grabbing on. So That's why, again, I think mindfulness meditation is so psychologically beneficial, because it gives us a ground for dealing with what's going on, but without a lot of elaboration. It's just learning, oh, I can create a mindful spaciousness in my mind that allows things to come and go without grabbing onto them, which creates all the problems. So, again, thoughts are the problem, but the answer is not stopping thoughts. Thoughts are the problem, the answer is what? Just letting them go. Right? So you may be sitting in meditation and the person next door may be talking very loudly or playing music or, I got a neighbor who's always out there revving his motorcycle, you know. And I could be going, what? That insensitive creep. You know, I'm trying to meditate, it's a quiet neighborhood, and he just selfishly is out there, right? Now, if the truth would be told, what is ruining my meditation, my peace of mind? The guy working on his motorcycle or what's going on inside my mind, right? Yeah. Because all that's really going on with the motorcycle is what? Sound. It's just a sound. And if I just let that sound be a sound and don't judge it bad or good and don't create a story about who's creating it, my mind's at peace. My mind is spacious. You see? So in that way, you could clearly see, somebody might think, oh, you know, all this noise is disturbing, is preventing me from having a good meditation, right? But that's not the truth. The truth is I'm preventing myself from that because I'm getting upset about that sound or that thing. So in the same way, thoughts. You know, people say, oh, I can't meditate because I have so many thoughts. Or I can't meditate because I have so many disturbing thoughts. No, that's not the problem. The problem is you're following them. You're letting them disturb you because you're treating them like what? Like they're something. Something solid, something real. And thoughts are not solid and real. Thoughts is what? What? They're just thoughts. And what is their characteristic? They come and go. They come and go. Nonstop. Come and go. Changing. Come and going. And that's just their nature. And if you try to grab a thought, you know, this is really quite a thought. If you try to grab it, what do you find? You can't grab a thought. They have no substance. So they're totally impermanent, always changing, and they have no substance. I mean, is that something to get upset about? Right? I mean, when you think about it rationally, you go, no, that's, you know. And yet what? We have invested so much energy, so much solidity in our thoughts and thinking that they're giving us correct information, right? That is why, you know, thoughts disturb us. You know, but you can sit in equanimity and you can have good thoughts and bad thoughts and they can be racing around, but your mindfulness is not racing around, right? I mean, there could be birds flying around in here, right? Whizzing around, right? And yet, the space of this room is not disturbed by the birds fluttering around, is it? No. There are no tracks. There are no traces. Right? The bird flies through and the space stays empty. Same way in our minds. But we don't know that because we are always focused on the thoughts. We don't see the space. We don't see the awareness. I mean, that's what meditation reveals to us. So does that make things clearer? I mean, let me just say finally, and again, I hear you're a beginner. I mean, I think in the beginning it's good to, you know, check it out, you know, read this and go to different groups and decide. But at some point you have to make up your mind, or else you'll just get confused, you know, because this one will say one thing and this one will say another thing, and, you'll be doing a little bit of this and that one works, and then you'll do a little bit of the other, and it's like that. So I think it's good to be open in the beginning and check things out and But at some point, it's like anything else, you know, if you want to develop some competency and bear some fruits, there has to be that kind of consistency, discipline, you know, like in anything we do. That's good. Any other questions? Yes.
Sometimes thoughts before you can see them as thoughts lead to feelings, which lead to emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And then the thought is lost.
Right.
Because now you get to the feelings and the emotions.
Yeah.
And obviously if you can keep it as a thought, you can let it go. But how do you sometimes kind of get it back to a thought of feeling?
So the question is, thoughts, and it's good if we can catch them, but sometimes thoughts lead to emotions, and emotion leads to feelings or even acting out, and, you know, once you're down that far, then what do you do? Again, you know, let me just remind, that's why we need to have a daily meditative practice, okay? I mean, just for that. I mean, it is a skill. It is a competency. It's a self-awareness that develops over time, right? So that's why I recommend that, you know, whatever you practice, you begin to develop, you know, make it part of your life. And whether you begin with 10 minutes a day or 20 minutes a day or 30 minutes a day, so you can begin to develop that relationship with your mind, with mindfulness, with thoughts and feelings, right? So you have some capacity. You see, because what you're talking about is the untrained mind, there is no separation. You know, thinking, feeling, acting out, saying it, it all happens like this, right? You know, and you've only known you've been down that road once again here. And here it's either because you feel lousy or you've once again done something that's only caused more harm, you know, disharmony or conflict or pain, you know. So this is where we begin, which is at the result, you know, at the end result, right? And at some point you go, I don't want to keep doing this, right? Because you see, I'm just creating suffering for myself, suffering for those I care about, it's, right? But this is where we begin, okay? And that's good to see that. You know, because we only get the motivation to work it back if we really see how painful this is. You know, how screwed up this is. You know what I'm saying? And how out of control this is. And again, I just really want to, you know, I mean, I think it's different, but it very much relates to the addict or the alcoholic, you know. Why does the alcoholic stop? Because of this. When they take their first drink, everything is what? Great. Right? Happy times are here again. Right? Alcoholics, addicts only stop drinking because of this. Right? Because they see this is where it gets to. And it's only when you get this, right, that you finally get this, that you're willing to go, well, what's causing me always to lose jobs? And what's causing me always for my relationships to go bad? Oh, maybe it's the drinking. Do you see what I'm saying? So I'm saying to you, if it gets here a lot, really become aware of that and kind of trace it back so you see the causation. Okay. And then you get to that next step, which is, all right, now what can I do about it? All right, so I don't get to hear. Now, obviously, and it needs to be said, the better you get at catching it earlier on, you know, before the horse is out of the barn, you know, the easier it'll be. I mean, because it's absolutely right. You know, once the horse is out, you know, once your habit energy has taken over, and you're just riding the horse, you know, and it's taking you, a lot of times all you can do is just hold on. Right? And that's just the truth. Okay. Now, if you can gain some skill, right, in reining the horse in, or jumping off, right? That is good. That is good. Again, you know, a lot of it has to do with clearly, I mean, we are now involved in our community with this intensive on suffering, dukkha, what we call dukkha. It's a Sanskrit word. And one of the things people are learning to do, it's called transforming personal suffering, is to really identify this. You see, so you really know. See, because a lot of times we go, I'm just really angry at that person, or I'm really worried, or, you know what I mean, they're mistreating me, or they're doing the, you know what I mean, the blame, or, you know, I'm blaming somebody, holding somebody else responsible for my feelings, you know. To be able to really see that all of that is suffering, right? Because no matter where you are in that game of blame, right, of making other people responsible for what you're going through, right, for feeling negative, afflictive emotions, right, that's all unhappiness. You're not happy. Even though you're pissed and feeling very self-righteous about how right you are and how wrong they are, right? If I stopped, what's your name again? Scott, that's right. And if I said, Scott, I know in the moment it made me feel good to be right and they're wrong, right? But are you happy in this moment? And I mean, do you feel at peace or at ease? And when you look at it that way, you go, no, right? You know, and if I said, Scott, is this going to end in a good place? And Scott would say what? No. Yeah, all right. So the ability, this comes back to mindfulness. And so there's mindfulness of thoughts and there's mindfulness of feelings. And to be able to realize, to be able to say to yourself, I am aware there's resentment in me. I'm aware that there's fear in me. I'm aware there's jealousy in me. I'm aware that there's judgment and criticism in me. You know, whatever it is, to be able to hold that feeling. And again, for many people, actually, it is feelings that are easier than thoughts, right? Because thoughts are quicker, right? And thoughts, because they're so... they seem so real, and we sort of don't have any self-awareness. They're often hard to see, but feelings, emotions are in the body. And so often your body will feel more out of sorts. You know, you'll feel the emotion, you'll feel the constriction. So what I would say is oftentimes it's the feelings and the emotions in the body that are easier to identify. But to stop the change, to stop the acceleration, which is what you're talking about, there needs to be mindfulness. And just to say, I am aware that there's resentment in me. You know, I know what the feeling is. That creates space. Not as just a little bit of self-awareness. Like a little bit of, the door has opened a little bit. Right? You know, I am aware, I got on the horse, I could feel the horse under me, and it was responding to me, right? I am now noticing that the horse seems to be gathering speed on its own, right? And when I try to rein it in, it does not seem to be responding to me, right? You see what I, you know, and to know that maybe gives you some opportunity of doing something else, right? But you have to have that sense that the horse is beginning to run away with you. You're no longer in control, right? The emotion now is in control. The obsession is now in control. So the mindfulness allows you to be aware of what's going on, and then it's important, I'd say, to name it. Right? Either the feeling or the, you know, obsession. I'm obsessing. I'm repeating. Oh, you know, I'm ruminating. I'm intensifying. You know, to see what the mind is actually doing. Right? And then if your commitment is, you don't want to keep going down that road. Because again, you've meditated on what it's like to be at the end of that road. You know where it goes. If you don't remind yourself, you see, if the alcoholic doesn't remind themselves, oh, it's the first and second drink, they feel good. That's where the fun is, right? Right. It's 4 hours later, you know, or the next day, you know, that's where it's going to end up. There's no reason to stop here. You see, it's only when you become aware of this that you stop here. And I think for many of us, we need to look deeply into our life and really see what are these patterns of thought, of feeling, of action, of acting, of speaking, that create suffering, create conflict, create unhappiness, create suffering for myself, for others, right? You know, if I say that I want, you know, I want to be a peaceful person, I want to be relaxed, I want to be at ease, right? I want to have an open heart. So that's my goal. And yet, when I look at all these kind of habitual kind of behaviors, they take me in the exact opposite place, don't they? Right? So, in the early stages of our practice, we want to kind of reflect in this way. You know, this type of reflection, which we could say involves some thought, is good. Because it's thought with a purpose. Right? I mean, human beings, as opposed to animals, we have this unique capacity, which is a wonderful capacity, which is we can reflect on ourselves. And that's pretty incredible. I mean, animals can't do that. We can step back from what we're doing, and we can evaluate it. Right? Squirrels don't do that. You know, squirrels never get together and talk about, is there another whole way we can do this thing? You know, living up in trees and leaves and, you know, running around for acorns all day. I mean, chasing each other around. I mean, you know, maybe there's a better way of doing life. Squirrels never think that way. They don't have self-reflection, right? They can't think about a better way of doing life. They just, you know, they just do it the way it always is. Human beings have this incredible capacity, right? Which most people don't use. Which means what? We can step out and we can look, right? We can look at our behavior, right? We can look at the results of our actions, right? Self-reflection, self-awareness. That's an incredible gift to you, you know, but people don't use it, right? So in a spiritual path, you want to now use it. So, you know, so you can really be clear, you know, about your life and where it goes and where you want it to go, you know, and all that. And then the tools of practice, the tools of mindfulness, the tools of meditation, the tools of deep looking, I mean, all the tools, all the practices now are in the service of a direction. Right? So, again, you know, we don't want to we want to reflect when we get into a path. You know, I mean, why do I want to meditate? Well, some people these days want to learn how to meditate or practice mindfulness simply for stress. Right? I got a lot of stress in my life. Right? So they want to learn some techniques just to de-stress themselves, right? Which is good. Just to learn to relax a little bit. That's good. But again, I'd say, you know, that's good up to a certain point. But there may be, you know, something deeper to look at in terms of your life and what you're doing that may be causing the stress that may, you know, help you more, right? So, you know, again, that's our wonderful self-reflective capacity, right? We can be all screwed up. You know, we could have psychosomatic illnesses, we could have chronic headaches, we can have, you know, can't sleep at night, we can, you know, all the psychosomatic, you know, stress-related kind of things that people are experiencing these days, and we can go, oh, you know, let me look deeply and see what it is I'm doing that could be causing this. that capacity. Thich Nhat Hanh says, you know, the two key things are stopping and deep looking. Right? But stopping and deep looking. But before we can look deeply, we have to stop. Stopping is meditation. Okay? Stopping is where I'm learning to stop. And I'm just mindful of what's going on. I'm concentrated what's going on. You know, I'm stopping. And now I can look deeply into the situation, look deeply into my mind, look deeply into the emotional train that I'm on, and see what's going on. Again, without having some capacity of stopping, you know, it's very hard to look deeply. So that's, again, you got to give yourself a little learning curve to develop some meditative capacity, right? Some mindfulness, some groundedness, some capacity for self-awareness, or you'll just frustrate yourself. You know, there's a learning curve here. We're in this intensive now. We have 50 people in it, and a number of them are beginners. And I'm saying, you know, you have to be in it for the long term. You know. I mean, people, they want the insights right away. They want to change things right away. And I mean, that's all good, but it's not very deep. You know. Better to get the skills and really get the understanding, and then you can really apply them. So patience. Which is, not an American characteristic. We want it now, we want it yesterday, right? That's kind of the way we deal with things, right? So being patient, letting things develop in a natural way, we're frustrated. That's why we love, what do you call it? That's why we love medications, right? Because we don't have to do anything. We just pop a pill and we feel differently. Unfortunately, that doesn't often produce the kind of real outcomes we want, and there can be problems with going about things that way. Did that, Scott, deal with your probably a little overkill? I'm sorry. Other questions? Yes. Yeah, so the question is, sometimes that stopping and looking deeply into emotions or patterns of behavior or patterns of reaction kind of bring up even kind of worse things, I think, in a certain way, you're saying. I mean, it brings up memories or experiences from the past that are even more emotionally laden than what you're experiencing there, and are often the roots of these emotions or responses in the present. They're often rooted in the past, and we know these days that as a culture, we are much more aware of trauma, childhood trauma, other kinds of emotional traumas that people have experienced, which are still unconsciously still very much alive. And as you were saying, through the process of stopping and being mindful and being present and kind of looking deeply, being willing to open up, one can all of a sudden find oneself in places where the emotions or the memories are even more painful than where one began. And the answer is yes, that is true. Let's say there's a deep, dark cave, right? You know it's deep. You know it's dark. You know it's dank. And you're not sure what's in there, right? Now, are you just going to blithely walk in? No. If you're smart, you'll prepare, right? You'll hopefully maybe read something about cave exploration. You'll hopefully start with small caves, right? And work yourself down. And you make sure that you're properly equipped. The right kind of lights, right? Whatever else is, I don't know about spelunking, but whatever else. right? And then you can go in with confidence. And even better, if there's a certain deep cave you want to explore, if you can either read about or talk to somebody who's done it, right? That should also give you a sense of the terrain, but also a sense of, you know, how to go about it, right? You know, what's going to happen so you're not surprised or ambushed. So, I mean, again, so what I'm saying is knowing where you want to go, it's good to, again, be prepared. And to know, you know, I mean, if people say, well, when you get down in this cave, there are bats and there are snakes and there are these gigantic spiders, right? It's good to know that. And it's good to be dressed in a certain way. And you know what I mean? That if you anticipate them, you can deal with them, right? It doesn't mean you're going to know exactly around which corner you're going to run into them. But it means that when you do run into them, you're not ambushed. You're not surprised. And you know what they are. Now, having said that, the bottom line is this mind is not as complicated as we make it out to be. Right? Within this mind, now I'm talking about our everyday mind, our relative mind, there are thoughts, there are memories, images, right? There are feelings that the mind is aware of. I mean, that's what we're going to run into. So, kind of using analogies of poisonous spiders and snakes and things is a little overblown. It seems like that, right? Just in the same way, in the dark, when we hear sounds, our imagination can run away with us, can't it? Especially if we've kind of grown up on a diet of horror movies and, I don't know, you know, stuff like that, right? I mean, but the truth is, right, all you're going to run into in your deep looking are thoughts, feelings, memories, which are often images. Am I right? I mean, that's all they are. And one should know that. And to, again, it's very much what I was saying with Scott, to if a memory arises, to be able to say, breathing in, I am aware of a memory that I'm having, of something that happened during childhood. And I am remembering something that is no longer happening. It's just a memory. It's a memory that may bring up feelings, but they're just feelings. And again, it's that same type of understanding where we talked about thoughts. Feelings also are empty of any kind of solidity, permanence. They come and go. Feelings come and go. Has anybody had a feeling here that has always been with them, never left them for a moment? No. I mean, you might have felt sad, you might have felt angry, but there are very few people who feel that forever. They come and go. And a lot of time, they come and go a lot quicker if we're not feeding them. If we're just what? Again, holding them in awareness. I'm aware of this feeling. I'm aware of this memory. Right? And that's all it is. None of these things have any power to harm us. Do they? I mean, what could they do? The harm has already occurred. the harm has already occurred when it happened. The only reason to remember is to heal what has already happened. Right? It is not about causing more pain. It's about healing at this point. That is the reason to remember. So if you realize that underlying a certain kind of behavior, a certain kind of emotional response, are these kind of deeper childhood experiences or past experiences, the only reason to go into them is to free yourself of them. And the way we, you know, there are many ways to do that, but simply to hold things in mindfulness and then to look deeply into the situation with understanding and compassion. Understanding to see clearly what was happening at the time, and compassion means to have compassion for yourself or that child who is suffering, who is scared, right? Who is hurt, who is lonely. You see, that memory is always, if it's a traumatic memory, is a memory of a suffering person, a suffering child, a suffering adolescent. And when we encounter someone who's suffering, our job is what? To help. So when you encounter a memory of yourself suffering, your job is to be present to that part of you, to hold that part of you in mindfulness, in awareness, in compassion, in understanding, and to be there with that part of you so it can rejoin you. See, for many people, the reason they still feel the pain of past events is because those experiences have not healed. They are still, that part of you is still wounded, is still hurting. If they weren't hurting, still you wouldn't hurt when you become aware of them. They only hurt because healing has not taken place. So when you encounter these wounded parts of yourself, whether they just come up spontaneously or whether they come up, you know, through a more concerted deep looking, the purpose of it is again to make contact with these parts of ourselves, to know that I'm just experiencing the memory of and the feelings associated with this past event that happened to this child, this adolescent, this young man, this young woman, whatever. And then to be present to them the same way you would to anybody you cared about. Right? I mean, if any of us, right? I mean, Scott, if you encountered someone you cared about and they were suffering, what would you do? Give them a kick? Kick them when they're down? No, you wouldn't do that. What would you do? You try to ease their suffering. How would you ease their suffering? Yeah, you're right. You'd be understanding with them. You'd be compassionate with them. You may hold them, right? I mean, give them support. It's simple. We all know how to do that. But we often only know how to do that with others. We don't know how to do that with the wounded parts of ourselves. It's really the same. And those wounded parts of ourselves will respond to that kind of energy the same way another human being, when we encounter them in their suffering and we offer them our support, our compassion, our understanding, our love, whatever, right? People respond to that. You all know that. You all know that because either you've extended it to somebody or you've been the recipient of it. So this is not, I mean, don't think you need a PhD to offer healing to yourself. And again, in the early stages or the later stages of meditation practice, is, you know, when you encounter, either consciously or just happens, parts of yourself that are wounded, please extend that to that part of you. And again, there's no danger. I mean, what's the danger? That's kind of a question. Well, I mean, what's really the danger if we just look objectively? Is there danger from going there? What? Yeah, the danger, there's no danger. All you encounter are feelings. Right? And pictures in your mind. That's all they are. I mean, if you see it differently, tell me. Do you see it differently? I mean, that's all they are. Again, meditation as a discipline helps us learn about our mind. It's not just a practice separate from our life. Meditation is just a word for how we develop self-awareness. Self-awareness of what? Of ourselves. How do we develop self-awareness? Of our thoughts, of our feelings, of our perceptions, of our emotions. Right? So meditation is just a way to do that. It's a tool that many of us have not grown up learning about. But it's a very useful tool. And once you learn that tool, you can do a lot of things with it. You can heal, you can transform, you can awaken. You know? So why don't we stop here? And we'll continue with Thich Nhat Hanh in 2 weeks.